Well, today, British Prime Minister David Cameron took questions in the House of Commons about Britain's impending exit from the EU. He was also asked about Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader, also against Brexit, who lost a confidence vote yesterday but shows no signs of resigning. Here's Cameron.
Look, if he's looking for excuses about why the side he and I were on about the referendum, frankly, he should look somewhere else. And I have to say to the Honourable Gentleman, he talks about job insecurity and my 2 months to go. It might be in my party's interest for him to sit there. It's not in the national interest. And I would say, for heaven's sake, man, go.
Well, Cameron did not join other European leaders meeting in Brussels today, and German Chancellor Angela Merkel said efforts to reverse the Brexit would be near impossible. But Gideon Rockman of the Financial Times says he doesn't believe Brexit will happen. He joins us via Skype from London. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
And I have to say, you wrote this piece before both Angela Merkel and David Cameron spoke yesterday and said, no, this is what's happening. Do you still think that a Brexit is avoidable?
I certainly think it's avoidable. I don't think it's at all inevitable that we'll leave. But I think you have to understand the pretty firm positions that came out of the European Council meeting in Brussels last night, where everyone said, yeah, this is it, as just the beginning of a process. The vote took place last week. It's maybe 5 days away now. This process of divorce, even for those who want it to happen fast, is going to take at least 2 years. So I think it's possible, maybe even likely, that we will extricate ourselves from this, but it's not going to be easy.
Well, and one of the things that people who agree with you have said is that David Cameron did not immediately invoke Article 50, which is the legal process by which the UK would leave the European Union, and that it's going to be much harder down the road, especially after all the negative headlines that have come out of this, for the next prime minister to actually do that. I mean, in October, we're going to have heard for months about all the problems with the Brexit.
Yeah, I mean, that is true to some extent. But there's a further issue, which is that I think even many people on the Leave campaign want to delay invoking Article 50 because it has a 2-year deadline. And their fear is that as soon as we in Britain do that, we lose a whole lot of leverage because the Europeans can just run the clock down and we end up with a lousy deal. So they want to start talking before we invoke Article 50, get a kind of framework deal in place, and then do it. However, the question is, will the Europeans tolerate that? At the moment, it doesn't look like they will. And meanwhile, voters are going to be very confused. They're going to say to the British government, hang on, we just voted to leave the EU. Like, why are you not going ahead with it?
Well, and when you use the term negotiation and leverage, I want to listen to, in that context, Nigel Farage, who's one of the big boosters of the Brexit campaign. He's the head of the UKIP party. Here he was yesterday at the European Parliament. He was laughed at. He was booed when he talked about what he would like to see happen. Let's listen.
Let's cut between us a sensible tariff free deal, and thereafter recognize that the United Kingdom will be your friend, that we will trade with you, we will cooperate with you, we will be your best friends in the world. But do that, do it sensibly, and allow us to go off and pursue our global ambitions and future. Thank you.
So when I hear that, Gideon Rockman, I hear somebody trying to negotiate for all the good parts of the EU that everybody likes. And when I hear Merkel and other European leaders say, nope, you've got to get out. If this is what you want, then just get out. I hear, in a sense, they're negotiating as well. They're saying, look, if this is what you really want, you're not going to get any of the good parts, even if later they may come back and say, OK, fine, you can have them.
Yeah, I mean, those are the opening positions, and they're very, very hard to reconcile at the moment. But everybody's making a calculation of where their interests lie. Now, of course, the British interests in a way are easier to define. We, as you say, want the good parts. We want the free trade. We don't want the free movement of people. And we don't want the supremacy of European Union law. The European interest is harder to define because you could argue it either that they have an interest in being absolutely uncompromising with us because they worry that if Britain makes a success of leaving the EU, other countries will leave the EU. However, I think there's also an argument that it's actually not in their interests, maybe, to turn their fire on Britain, so to speak, because Britain is an important player in Europe. It's a big economy. It's the second or first largest military force in the EU. It's a major diplomatic player. It's on the UN Security Council. And generally, the EU's rhetoric is about creating peace and understanding in Europe. My hope is that as over the course of the next year or two, people calm down and they move back towards the more cooperative route. But I don't think there's a guarantee of that.
So going back to your original idea in the Financial Times, the headline, "I do not believe Brexit will happen." How will we know in the coming months if what you have laid out is coming true?
I don't think we will know in the coming months. It may take a couple of years. I think that basically what I hope will happen, and the way I think it's happened with other countries rejecting EU treaties and referenda, Denmark in 1992, Ireland over the Lisbon and Nice treaties, that when people have a little time to assimilate the shock, they see a way around it, they negotiate a new deal, they have a second referendum, and the problem is got around. That is the way to do it, because this was not an overwhelming vote to leave the EU. It was 52-48%, right, which is means that all you need is a 2% shift in the UK for us to stay. And it is not hard to imagine at least a 2% shift, given the fact that the people who campaigned for leave told everyone there would be no economic consequences. And we now see that, in fact, economic, really quite grave economic consequences are unfolding. So on the other hand, I think that if the Europeans adopt a very uncompromising situation, they'll more or less force us out of the door because of this kind of mutual recriminations that will set in. However, if they cool down and if the Brits handle it skillfully, they might be able to find this middle ground compromise that allows us in a couple of years' time to say to the British, OK, do you want to reconsider? And I think at that point, if they were presented with a viable and face-saving option, they would take it.
That's Gideon Rachman of the Financial Times joining us from London. Gideon, thank you.
My pleasure.